The House will come to order.
Stand up, guys.
Please stand if you're able. The flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Riley.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Pastor Gary Taylor from the Calvary Community Church in Albany, guest of Representative Springer.
Let's pray. Our gracious and most holy God, we approach you today not on our own merit, but because of the sacrifice of your dear Son. We ask for your guidance and wisdom this day as we go about the business of our great state. May you guide us as we think of our youth and the legacy we leave them and the priceless treasure that they are. O God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. Be our guard while life shall last and our eternal home. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Taylor. Courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the great privilege and honor today to, first of all, I want to kind of do this in order. It's kind of SIO Day at the Capitol. I'm excited about that. But before we start that, I would like to introduce a couple honorary pages from State and Middle School. Would you ladies please stand? And know that Staten's only about 10 miles from SIO, so this is still part of the SIO Day at the Oregon State Capitol. Mariah Fultz is 14 in the 8th grade, and she's on the dance team and plays volleyball and would love to be a nurse or a doctor. We also have Aaliyah Sterner. She's 13, also in the 8th grade, and she's part of the Talented and Gifted Program, Associated Student Body, and plays volleyball, and she, too, would like to be a doctor. So please, colleagues, welcome them to the House. And then I kind of, if I may, Mr. Speaker, have a couple more introductions to make.
Please.
Over at the side aisle here, and this truly is SIO Day, and I'm excited to have these folks here. Gary, where'd you go? This is Pastor Gary Taylor, and as you heard, he pastors at a church just outside of Albany, not my district, so I'll owe the good representative from Albany an apology here. But Gary lives in my district, and he was actually one of my adjunct professors at Corbin College just a couple years ago, and good neighbor. So he and his wife, Melody, are here, and three of their children. And so, colleagues, if you would please welcome them. And then over here on the side aisle, we have Jack and Arlene Gorley, and I'm going to be talking about them a little bit later in a bill that I'll be carrying. And then we have some kiddos from FFA, from SIO High School. And then I know that we have some community members back there from SIO that I recognize. And so please, colleagues, welcome my friends to the House today.
Welcome. Great to have you all here. For the courtesies, Representative Sigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I get the honor and privilege of introducing my very first page from East of the Mountains. And Skylar, you want to stand? This is Skylar Nelson, colleagues, and she's actually my neighbor behind us. I've watched her grow up. She's a senior at Bend High School. She's involved in Honor Society, the Sparrow Club, the Environmental Club. She's on the tennis team, and for the last year or so, she's been working with Guide Dogs for the Blind. She has been accepted and is going to be attending Mesa State College in Grand Junction, Colorado, this next fall, where I also have my family. I have family living there. My sister lives there, so there's a connection there as well. And she's going to be majoring in environmental sciences, with a goal of either being an environmental scientist or an environmental attorney. So welcome, Skylar.
I also want to introduce a few other pages who are here today, two from my district in Gladstone. If we could ask McKenna Hopkins to stand. Good morning, welcome. McKenna is involved in a whole variety of sports. Her career goals are to be a journalist, a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, or a senator. So colleagues, remind her that a representative is actually a higher ranking office than a senator this morning. Welcome, McKenna. And secondly, Nicole Hannon, who, like McKenna and like my son, is an eighth grader at Cracksburger Middle School. Nicole is active also in several sports and wants to be a politician or a lawyer. So welcome to both of you. Also, on behalf of Representative Thatcher, let me introduce two pages from Kaiser. First of all, Madison Mitchell. Madison is a seventh grader at Whitaker Middle School. Activities involve include lacrosse, leadership track, volunteering in the Humane Society, wants to be a veterinarian. So she missed a very interesting debate yesterday. Welcome. And also Mackenzie Mitchell, who's also a seventh grader at Whitaker, involved in leadership class, track, on the honor roll, wants to be a pastry chef or a business owner. Welcome to all of our pages. Thank you for your service to the House today. Any further courtesies? Let's go to our moment in Oregon sesquicentennial history. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Gene Ward, Professor of Communication Emerita at Lewis and Clark College. Abigail Scott Dunaway. Outspoken and controversial, Abigail Scott Dunaway is remembered as Oregon's mother of equal suffrage and the pioneer woman suffragist of the Great Northwest. As lecturer, organizer, writer, and editor, Dunaway devoted over 40 years to the cause of women's rights. In the Idaho Territory in 1896, Dunaway celebrated victory for women's suffrage. In Washington Territory, her early successes were overturned, although the state of Washington would give women the vote in 1910. In Oregon, which defeated women's suffrage more times than any other state, Dunaway witnessed five losses in 1884, 1900, 1906, 1908, and 1910 before Oregon women gained the ballot in 1912. As editor of the New Northwest, Abigail Scott Dunaway exposed and combated what she identified as social injustice. She discussed questions as diverse as the legal status of women, the treatment of the Chinese, policies related to American Indians, and the limits of temperance and prohibition. Abigail was mainly self-taught and had less than a year of formal schooling in rural Illinois. Still, she was determined to make the New Northwest a voice for human rights, particularly women's suffrage. Dunaway was honored when Governor Oswald West asked her to write the Oregon Woman's Suffrage Proclamation in 1912, but she did not live to see the 19th Amendment grant suffrage to all women. On October 11, 1915, a few days before her 81st birthday, she died in a Portland hospital. And thank you, Obie, for that nice ending.
Further courtesies? Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Greenlick, off the floor. Representative Thatcher, off the floor. Quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 5507, 5508, 5509, 5515, 5516, 5517, 5538, 5546, 102, 180, adopted SCR 7, SJR 30, and SM1, concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 30. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 30.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions.
SCR 7, congratulating William Paul Young for his success as author of The Shack. SJR 30, expressing support for Oregon Progress Board and Developing Oregon Shines 3.
Measures first read first time or passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special order of business. Clerk will read the memorial.
HJM 8, urging Board of Governors of United States Postal Service and Citizens Stamp Advisory Committee to create postage stamp commemorating 100th Infantry Battalion Regimental Combat Team of the United States Army for service during World War II.
Can we have the body paying attention to Representative Clem? The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HJM 8A. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the memorial.
To the memorial. Thank you. Colleagues, on the side aisle, you will notice some gentlemen. These six individuals are members. Well, five of them are members of the 442nd Division, which this resolution honors. One of them was a member of the Military Intelligence Service, which I will talk about in my speech. Shortly after the initiation of hostilities between the United States and the Empire of Japan, the United States Army discharged all of its Japanese-American members, fearing they might prove to be less than loyal American citizens. Hundreds of them refused to give up their chance to defend their country, and they went to work as volunteers, building barracks, digging ditches, and building roads for the military services. After a few months, thousands of these second-generation Americans won back their right to serve in the military. Fighting as a single combat team through the campaigns in Italy, France, and Germany, they endured some of the most savage fighting of the entire war and earned for themselves the most distinguished record of any U.S. military unit for its size and length of service in this country's history. Initially refused the right to serve their country, and with their friends and family incarcerated in the United States, these loyal Americans of the 442nd became the most decorated unit in the entire war. They started with about 4,000 men. The combined 100th Infantry Battalion and the 442nd Regimental Combat Team fought with such courage and determination and suffered so many casualties that they had to be replaced nearly 3.5 times. The 14,000 Japanese Americans who served in this unit earned between them some 18,000 awards, including an unprecedented 7 presidential unit citations, almost 9,500 Purple Hearts, 4,000 Bronze Stars, 560 Silver Stars, and 21 Congressional Medals of Honor, among many other decorations. During a brief lull in the fighting in August of 1944, Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal visited the Italian front for an inspection. As the men of the 442nd marched past Division Commander Major General Charles W. Ryder, turned to the Secretary and said proudly, "My best outfit. The American generation which produced these heroes is rapidly passing away. Let us be sure to perpetuate the honor we owe to this best outfit while some of them are still here among us." I'm just going to introduce them by name. One person who's not here is my wife's uncle, Yori Tambera, who also served in this unit. Don Matsuda, he's the commander of the Nisei veterans. George Azumano, Jim Onchi, Leaky Nakashimada, Art Iwasaki, Joe Onchi, and Henry Yoshikai. So this resolution asks the Postal Service to issue this combat team, this unit, this military intelligence service a stamp. As some of you may have read in the Oregonian, the initial discussion was, yeah, we're not sure we're going to do a stamp. So we're going to send a message loud and clear with this resolution that at a bare minimum, these heroes deserve their own postage stamp. We have letters available from Senators Wyden and Merkley telling the U.S. Postal Service, you really ought to issue these guys a stamp. They've earned it. We've had conversations with people in the White House, in the U.S. Senate, about this stamp, and I feel very comfortable in saying we can get these done for these heroes. But we're going to get to add our voice today. It's at a key moment. The Stamp Advisory Committee meets soon. This resolution will join with resolutions from several other, particularly West Coast states, where most of these heroes lived and died in many cases. And they're here today, and I'm just pleased to and honored to be part of helping pass this resolution. I would encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I just want to take a moment to thank Representative Clem for bringing us this memorial and affording us the opportunity to learn more about the history of the 442nd. It was a honor to hear this memorial in the House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee, and really for me it was a fascinating moment in history that from which I learned a great deal. So I'm delighted that we're able to welcome our distinguished guests here today. And colleagues, I urge your passage of House Joint Memorial 8.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really don't have much more to add. Again, it is an honor for us to get to spend part of our day with these heroes, and we're thankful that they're still here with us to be able to be here today, and we wish them the best of health and long life.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. HJM 8, having received the required majority, is declared adopted.
I'll wait.
As you can tell from the applause, your contribution to our country, to our communities, to our state, is truly honored, and we appreciate having had the opportunity to take this memorial today. So thank you for your time here at the legislature. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that House Bill 2554 be made a special order of business immediately. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2554 relating to definition of vulnerable user of a public way.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2554A, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2554 comes to you today from the Judiciary Committee with a unanimous due pass recommendation. This is a very straightforward bill. It simply modifies the definition of a vulnerable user as it relates to the offense of careless driving. But before I can talk to you about House Bill 2554, I need and I want to lay the groundwork for what this bill does. So in 2007, this body passed House Bill 3314, which created the definition of a vulnerable user and added stiffer penalties when a careless driving ticket was issued and, this is important, and caused serious physical injury or death. Let me explain. When there is a traffic accident, sometimes the investigating officer, I prefer to say deputy for obvious reasons, issues a citation. Sometimes. Careless driving situation or citation would be reasonable if a person operating a vehicle in a manner that endangers or would likely endanger a person or property. Prior to the vulnerable user bill in 2007 that this body passed, the penalty for that citation, if it was appropriate, was the same if you hit a telephone pole or you killed a person on Grandpa's John Deere. That doesn't seem right. Obviously, this body agreed and changed the law. So the definition of a vulnerable vehicle includes skateboards, bicycles, farm tractor, or implements of animal husbandry without an enclosed shell. So now if a careless driving ticket is issued and there is a person who sustains serious physical injury or death, the penalty is increased. The penalty, when a vulnerable user is involved, is community service, stiffer fine, license suspension, and most importantly, traffic safety courses. There's an education piece. However, the punitive portion of this sentence can be suspended or is suspended if the offender meets the service portion of the sentence. So this isn't about having the biggest hammer. This is about educating people. So that explains how the law currently works. And I think it's a good law. I remember the frustration investigating an accident, many of those, and someone was hurt, and certainly there's other crimes and other offenses that can apply, but if it was a careless driving ticket that was appropriate, they got the same fine as a 16-year-old squirreling their tires around on a street. So in certain circumstances, this addresses the issue. So now I want to talk to you about House Bill 2554. I believe, and I guess this is probably one of the perks of being a quasi-freshman in this body, is I'm looking at what the last legislative session did. And I think it was an oversight. I think it was as simple as an oversight. The law currently only applies to tractors without an enclosed shell. So all of those combines we see every day on the road, and every day that I leave my house in the summer, I get behind at least three or four of them. The new tractors with the CD players and the air conditioning that my husband drools over every time he sees them. And certainly the hay stackers that carry a ton of hay on the back of them that have a cab, they don't count. They're not vulnerable vehicles as the law stands today. So the result is most of these tractors you see aren't even protected. I thought they were. Colleagues, I don't believe this is what the legislature, this body intended in 2007. So today I bring you House Bill 2554, which addresses this oversight. This bill does two very simple things. First, it eliminates four words, four very important words, without an enclosed shell. Those words are stricken from the current language if this bill passes. So it now will include those other tractors. Also, the second thing it does is an amendment from my good friend and colleague from Albany. Motorcycles have been added to the list of vulnerable vehicles. We're not voting on the sentencing related to the vulnerable vehicle law today. We are simply voting on the definition. So here's the question you should all have in your minds. Why am I here today encouraging you to pass a bill that seems so narrow in scope and certainly won't qualify, quite frankly, as the most exciting piece of legislation to pass out of this body this session? Last July, 16-year-old Nathan Gourley was driving a haystacker about 5 miles from my house. He was struck by another vehicle, and he was killed. Unfortunately, my son and I were at the accident, coming home, hanging out in our neighborhood, our community, our neck of the woods, our friends, which is why it's SIO Day at the Capitol. So certainly, as a new legislator in my community, I was asked, what are you going to do about this? So we started talking, we had some meetings, and we were a community that was grieving and hurt. But in that grief, you have an incredible family, an incredible FFA chapter, and an incredible community that says, let's find the good. Let's fix this. So we looked at lots of different options. And we came up with that bill in 07 that really didn't do what I believe it was intended to do. Now, laws don't prevent bad things from happening, and we know that. But laws do, they do raise awareness, and this law is particularly good at educating people. And that's the best part of this law, is the piece that says if you're convicted, you'll do community service and you will take some additional driver training. This is an agricultural state. And I live in a very agricultural community. If I didn't have a few trees and a really strong arm, I could throw a rock and hit the Gourley's dairy. It's just down the valley from me. This law is not just about Sio. This law is not just about Nathan Gourley. This law is about Oregon and our agricultural community and our kids, me being one of them, that rode on those tractors a long time ago, quite frankly, before I should have been riding those tractors and driving those tractors, and it's probably why I wrecked that tractor. So I urge your I vote on a bill that does the right thing for the right reasons and raises awareness, and that's what this is about. But be assured, my community and my friends behind me here, we're not done. This is one part of the process. Education and reemphasizing that message, share the road once again, is the drum that we are going to continue to beat. Colleagues, I urge your I vote. You will find a floor letter on your desk. I encourage you to read that. And please, help us do a good thing for the right reasons.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Mr. Speaker. Let's see. Yes, Mr. Speaker. A question to the carrier, please.
Question to the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
I apologize. Yep. I was on my way over to ask the questions to alert you to it. Would you carry on other than that one of the representatives was your friend. What the concept is in adding motorcycles to this, while we're talking about something that's basically an agricultural bill?
Well, I won't speak to his thinking behind it. But what I will say to that is we had some discussions. Motorcycles were, I guess, one of the vehicles that was discussed in 2007. Obviously, I wasn't privy to those conversations. And so in that surfaced again, and the good representative from Albany came to me and said, I'd like to put this amendment in, including motorcycles. And again, I can't speak to the conversations that occurred in 2007, and I can't speak to what his thinking is, but the conversations we had revolved around the lack of, and this isn't just, this bill is not just an agricultural bill, it includes skateboards and scooters and things like that, where the operator is more vulnerable than we are in our vehicles.
Another question to carry.
Additional carrier, the question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
Thank you very much. I was trying to find the statute that, the subsection of the statute that the vulnerable vehicles reports to, but would you just repeat, please, what the significance is of being a vulnerable vehicle? Which does it add penalties to? I don't particularly care about the section number, but if you would tell me what the significance of adding motorcycles to that is compared relative to other issues in the statutes.
Okay, thank you for that question. I guess the significance would be the significance of the motorcycle would be the same as any other vehicle, and I actually have the definition and the penalty of a vulnerable vehicle. So keep in mind we're talking about a narrow set of criteria here. If you have an accident, if somebody is at fault, and if there's serious physical injury or death, and the most appropriate citation is a careless driving ticket, and certainly it can be greater than that in some circumstances, then this is what occurs in addition to the typical fines which are set by the judge. So if it is a vulnerable vehicle that has been hit, impose a sentence that requires the person to complete a traffic safety course, perform between 100 and 200 hours of community service. The community service must include activities related to driver improvement and providing public education on traffic safety. Impose but suspend on the condition that the person complete the requirements of paragraph A of this subsection. A fine of up to $12,500, notwithstanding ORS 153.018, and a suspension of driving privileges as provided in ORS 809.280, and set a hearing date up to 1 year from the date of sentencing. At the hearing described in subsection 3C of this section, the court shall, if the person has successfully completed the requirements described in section 3A of this section, dismiss the penalties imposed under subsection 3B of this section, or if the person has not successfully completed the requirements described in subsection 3A of this section, grant the person an extension based on good cause shown, or impose the penalties under subsection 3B of this section. This is the last part. When a court imposes a suspension under subsection 4 of this section, the court shall prepare and send to the Department of Transportation an order of suspension of the driving privileges of this person. Upon receipt of an order under the subsection, the department shall take action as described under ORS 809-280. So if I'm understanding the question correctly, there's not a difference between a tractor, a scooter, or a motorcycle. They all apply.
Thank you very much for your answers to the bill, please.
To the bill.
I do remember what we were talking about in 2007, and the notion was really to deal with vulnerable individuals, which includes, if I may, A pedestrian, a highway worker, a person riding an animal, or a person operating any of the following, and that includes a farm tractor or implement of husbandry without an enclosed shell, a skateboard, a roller skate, inline skaters, a scooter, and a bicycle. All of which clearly seem to me to be vulnerable vehicles, and I think the notion of with or without a shell is a significant one, and one that I support adding. I don't have a problem with that. But I have serious problems adding a motorcycle to that. And we fight continually to make sure motorcycles understand that they are regular vehicles and they follow the regular rules of the road. And I think the notion of seeing a motorcycle as a vulnerable vehicle does not make sense and was not in the spirit of the original sense of this bill. So I'm going to be voting against this bill as a signal to the Senate, and I would urge my colleagues in the Senate when they consider this to remove motorcycles from this definition. I think it sends the wrong message about motorcycle safety, and I would urge that we see this as a as an agricultural bill, as the Farm Bureau does in this supporting letter, which I absolutely support, but not to change, to tip the balance of the relationship between cars and motorcycles further. So I support your sense of the bill. I definitely support the agricultural component, but I'm going to be voting against this bill and hope our colleagues in the Senate change it and send it back to us. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, just want to address the issue since it's surfaced now regarding the use of motorcycles in this bill. And I want to thank the carrier, too, for moving this bill forward. For those of you who have served in law enforcement capacity, you know what it's like to investigate a motor vehicle accident involving a motorcycle, because the majority of the time, the rider of the motorcycle will tell you that the vehicle didn't see them. That's what this is all about. It's an awareness issue for drivers that are operating a motor vehicle other than a motorcycle.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Springer, would you care to close?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate those questions. I appreciate the real concern given this bill. And I'm sure that it was no less in 07, and I'm sure some of these same discussions came up. And I appreciate that because I know that hopefully as this passes and goes over to the Senate, it's because we've given it its appropriate care and concern. And so I thank you, and again, I urge your aye vote because we can do a right thing for the right reasons.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Representative Greenlick votes no. House Bill 2554, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests the unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And it'll come from here, just a statement. We have today visiting us members of the student scholars from the community colleges and also members from those community college boards. There is a reception for them today at noon with the governor. We're excited. So if there are any of the scholars present, would they please stand so that we can see who you are in the back? appreciate your dedication to your studies and being a part of today's activities that are going for you, and thank you for coming and visiting the house. And also want to welcome the board members to those community colleges. So if you could stand as a group, we'd love to see all of those of you who are contributing your time to help. And community college presidents and others that are here with the community college, would you please stand too? Again, thank you all for being a part of your legislative body today. Thank you. Further courtesies? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd ask you to join me in welcoming four homeschooled honor students from the southern part of my district today. They are, and as I read your names, if you'd please stand there on the south aisle here. Rachel Carrier from Scappoose, who is an 11th grader. Her activities include track, cross country, soccer, and music. And she is interested in becoming a teacher. We also have Grace Ekstrom from Scappoose. She's a 10th grader and enjoys music, art, and massage, and is looking forward to a career as an animal trainer. We also have Olivia Marud from Warren, who's in the 10th grade. She participates in cross country and track and is looking forward to a career as a translator. And last but not least, Victoria West from Scappoose, 9th grade, loves softball, baton, and singing, and is looking forward to becoming a cosmetologist in the Army. Welcome to your capital, and I hope you enjoy your day here.
Further courtesies. We are now back in propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2540 and repass the bill.
Representative Schaffler moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2540 and repass the bill. To your motion.
House Bill 2540-A, which was unanimously passed by both the House and Senate, repeals ORS 657.506, which designates a person or an organization engages in musician services as an employer for unemployment insurance compensation unless a written contract designates the musician is responsible. The Senate added an emergency clause in order for music venues to immediately take advantage of the measure. Urge your vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2540 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2540, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. First readings, House bills.
House Bill 2001, relating to transportation. House Bill 3477, relating to telephone directories. House Bill 3478, relating to criminal sentencing. House Bill 3479, relating to private clubs.
House bills read the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2095, relating to elections, is declared an emergency. House Bill 2307, relating to collection agencies. House Bill 3194, relating to drive while under the influence of intoxicants.
Bills read the second time are passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2968, relating to hearings for suspension of driving privileges, authorized postponement of implied consent hearing if person's attorney is ill on vacation or has certain scheduling conflict at time hearing must otherwise be held.
Question now arises. on the passage of House Bill 2968A. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick votes aye. 2968A, having received the constitutional majority, is vote is passed. Clerk will read the next bill and short summary.
House Bill 3063, relating to Oregon Natural Areas. Changes name of Natural Heritage Program to Natural Areas Program. Changes name of Oregon Natural Heritage Plan to Oregon Natural Areas Plan.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3063. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Representative Wingard votes aye. House Bill 3063, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2704, relating to public employee retirement and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third and final reading and passage of House Bill 2704. Representative Escobal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2704 comes out of a unanimous vote from the committee. PERS members can apply for disability retirement if they sustain an injury or disease while performing a duty of a PERS-covered employer, regardless of their length of service. PERS monitors all Tier 2 and Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan pension program members who are receiving PERS disability payments and temporary total disability or permanent total disability payments under the state's Workman's Comp program. If the total amount of the benefit exceeds the Tier 2 member's monthly salary at the time of the disability or exceeds 75% of the OPSRP member's monthly salary, the next PERS disability retirement allowance or benefit is reduced accordingly. The member is notified of the offset amount each month via a letter. If the disability payments have stopped before all offsets are made, the member is invoiced for any amount of overpayment. The offset does not apply to Tier 1 members. House Bill 2704 aligns the treatment of Tier 2 and OPSRP pension program members, PERS disability payments with the Tier 1 members' disability retirement allowance. The bill is not retroactive and only applies to benefits paid after the operative date of January 1, 2010. No one opposed this bill. It has no financial impact on PERS.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Escobal, would you like to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Representative Chris Edwards. Off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Comp, how do you vote? Comp votes aye. House Bill 2704, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2714, relating to aquatic invasive species and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2714A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a bill that I picked up because we have had a task force working on invasive species. They came up with recommendations to the 09 session, but because of budget constraints and others, it was not put into legislation until we picked it up and realized that these recommendations need to be considered and forwarded into a bill so that we can move forward with protecting our waterways from ballast water that could come from overseas or from a bay like San Francisco, which is probably as infested with invasive species as any bay in the world. So the situation that is at hand is that California and Washington have both raised their penalties for discharge of hazardous ballast water into the waters of their state. Oregon has not followed suit and needs this bill in order to get DEQ to have a continuation of the work group come together to give them recommendations on how they should move forward with implementation of those recommendations to include raising the fines and fees for people who discharge hazardous ballast water into our waters. The current system, I don't know that we have any actual examples, but the current system, if a boat were coming up the Columbia River and recognized that it had a problem with its ballast water, but it was going to a Washington port, they would just come over to the Oregon side of the river, discharge their ballast, because the fines are so much less that the penalty would be easier to pay than going back out to sea and making the exchange. So this is a bill to protect our waters and to have a group of legislators and others recommend what those changes should be to our DEQ. If you read the bill, it has no fiscal because the group of people who are going to do this will not get paid, including the legislators. They will do it because it is something that is important to all of us. They will not get per diem, they will not get mileage, nor will any of the other members. We've talked to the agencies and the other groups of people who have been involved in the past. They believe there are people who are willing to do that because this is such a critical issue at this particular time. I urge your eye support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Widener votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Representative Krieger votes aye. House Bill 2714A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2763, relating to procurements of agricultural goods.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2763A. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a great bill. It comes to you from the House Ag Committee unanimously. We here in Marion County were having a conversation with one of the local farmers at a Farm Bureau meeting, and he said, you know, I used to be able to sell the Department of Corrections some of my second-tier pears, and then at some point they stopped buying from me. They said, no, we're not going to buy any more fruit from you guys, even though they're only a few miles away, because they can't bid the entire menu for all of correction statewide fruits and vegetables, so therefore the local farmer can't bid anything. So I called the Department of Corrections food purchaser, and he said, there's a statute that's stopping us from buying Oregon with our state agency money. Says we can't do it. So we're fixing it today, folks. It says that if you are a contracting agency, you may buy from Oregon farmers. If you go over 10% of low bid, you got to make a written determination of why and that you went over, so somebody isn't, you know, selling fruit from their Uncle Louie's farm to a state agency and getting away with something. But it'll be in writing. There'll be a paper trail. It's a great bill. It's going to help Oregon farmers. And our state government should be buying Oregon whenever they can. Food, desks, computers, flags. I found out there's not even flags. The state of Oregon flags aren't even made in Oregon. Anyway, we're getting somewhere. This bill is a great bill. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill came to my attention when my county commissioners, Multnomah County commissioners, passed a resolution expressing their desire to purchase local Oregon produce, even if that local Oregon produce was slightly more expensive than the same good purchased from elsewhere. I think that's really significant, colleagues, an urban county saying that Oregon agriculture is important enough to spend a little more money on. And they did that, I think, for several reasons. One, purchasing local produce is a way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions associated with transportation. Second, local produce tastes better. It's more nutritious, typically, than produce that's traveled thousands of miles to get here. They looked at the current law, and as a good representative from Salem has described, they looked at current state law and saw they couldn't do it. Under current law, if a box of Hood River pears costs even a penny more than a box of New Zealand pears, public agencies are required to purchase the New Zealand pears. We fixed that today. We allow our local governments to pay a little bit more, if they choose, for local produce. This is a good bill. I'd like to draw your attention to the floor letter from Multnomah County, and hope that we can join together in supporting local agriculture as folks representing rural, urban, suburban, and all types of Oregon. Thank you much.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close?
Just briefly. Multnomah County, $15 million a year worth of food purchasing they want to spend with Oregon farmers. I just think it's a fantastic thing. Thank you.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2763A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2778, relating to injured state workers and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2778A. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2778A comes to you on a unanimous vote from your Committee on Business and Labor. This bill is very simple, straightforward, and a good public policy proposal. It directs the Department of Administrative Services Personnel Division to adopt by rule a process for identifying entry-level and light-duty assignments that injured workers can perform. Under Oregon's workers' compensation system, if an injured worker's attending physician certifies that the worker is capable of returning to work, including under what conditions and/or limitations, then the injured worker must be reinstated to his or her former position, if that position is deemed suitable and it remains available. The key phrase, colleagues, and remains available.
Problems have arisen in state government when injured workers' jobs at injury are unavailable, even though other suitable work in other state agencies may be available. There simply has not been adequate cross-agency return-to-work coordination among our various state agencies. House Bill 2778A will fix this imbalance, and indeed it must be fixed. Much of the Oregon miracle in workers' compensation reform is attributable to our state's early return-to-work policies. Management, labor, insurers, medical practitioners, and workers' compensation experts all agree that early return to work is a critical component of an injured worker's recovery process. Colleagues, early return to work is standard operating procedure in Oregon's private sector, yet our state's performance record has been less than stellar. House Bill 2778A would raise the bar for our state government's involvement in return-to-work programs for injured state workers. Workers' compensation statutes, rules, and enforcement are all creations of our state government. Those whom we regulate have taken laws seriously and lifted both our return-to-work and pure premium savings records to levels unmatched by any other state, and to wit, $16 billion have been saved over the past two decades. Colleagues, it is time that we take our own medicine and become a model of excellence for the return to work of those whom we employ. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2778A.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Witt, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? He votes aye. Having House Bill 2778A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2794, related to health benefit plan coverage of human papillomavirus virus vaccine.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2794. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm bringing to you today a bill that we all want to vote for. And this is something that everybody knows about. The word cancer mean anything? Every one of us knows somebody or has experienced it ourselves. And it's the dreaded C word. While we have a lot of research going on, and in particular, someone I have been privileged to work with is Dr. Brian Druker at the OHSU, now called the Knight Cancer Institute. While he's busy doing his work trying to find cures and preventive measures for all kinds of cancers, we have at our hands today a procedure that can prevent a cancer that women contract, cervical cancer, by vaccinating our younger girls to prevent the HPV virus, which causes cervical cancer. This bill is basically a prevention bill. This will help innumerable young women prevent ever having to worry about cervical cancer as they grow older. There are also even studies right now on boys to see if it can help with some cancers that boys and men get. But at this point, this is what this bill does is requires your insurance companies to cover the cost of these three, it's a series of three vaccination, three shots. And these will be given to girls starting at 11 years of age and up to around 20-something. And it's basically to do it preventively so you catch them before they become sexually active, which then compromises some of the cancer prevention activities of the virus or the vaccine. We vaccinate our children for a variety of diseases, and this is a disease that we can add to that list. And now, right now, girls can check this cancer off before they even have to worry about it. Usually it doesn't come till later in life, but we had one young man who some people might know from the building before when he worked here years before. His wife, who's in her 30s, contracted this cancer, and she had a very, very difficult time. It costs a lot of money. It causes a lot of pain and suffering. And going through chemo is no picnic, as anybody who has done it knows. So please prevent a cancer by voting for this bill today and help us check off a very, very serious disease because we can. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I voted no in this committee simply for one reason, and that was I couldn't get a question answered. And that simple question was, what insurance companies don't cover the HPV vaccine today? And what problem are we trying to solve? That question was asked on several occasions to more than a couple people, and the simple answer is, we don't know. We can't find one. LifeWise, Pacific Source, Regents, they all cover it. What group of people are not going to be required to be included in this mandate? Any company that's self-insured in this state of Oregon is not going to be required to follow this mandate. Medicaid is not required, but it's already covered by Medicaid, so that should not be an issue. Simply, I'm not sure that we are solving a problem. If it's about education, great. Great vaccine, let's do it. But I don't think we need to add another mandate to our long list of mandates in the state of Oregon, so I urge a no vote.
Further discussion? Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, I just want to take this opportunity to talk about this issue of the mandates. I now know we may have other bills on the same topic. There are currently more than 36 insurance mandates in Oregon, and the studies that I have seen show that each of those mandates raises our monthly premiums somewhere between 1 and 10%, each one. So it's safe to assume that rates, insurance rates in Oregon are somewhere between 36% and 360% higher than they would be without the mandates. As insurance rates increase, some people at each price point can no longer afford it and they stop insuring. So every time we pass one of these mandates, somebody goes without health insurance as a result. So I urge you to bear in mind that each one of these insurance mandate bills actually comes with a cost. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I just want to point out again, as the good representative from the Coast mentioned, HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States, with about 20 million people currently infected. In Oregon, there are approximately 111 new cases of cervical cancer and 41 deaths per year. Cervical cancer is the 16th most common cancer among Oregon women. 50 to 80% of Oregonians will acquire one or more sexually transmitted HPV infection in their lifetime, and women have an 80% chance of getting HPV by the time they are 50 years old. And it's most common in young people who are in their late teens and 20s. And because we could not come up with an answer to the question that was asked by the good representative in Josephine about county, about what insurance companies do not cover this vaccine, it does not mean that it's not needed. We hope that every insurance company covers this, and that every insurance company that comes to Oregon in the future will also cover this. So contrary to what had been stated about a mandate costing more, if what the good representative said is true, that the insurance companies are already covering that, then we can assume that there will be no further cost to this mandate. Because this is a very serious illness that not only makes people very sick, but kills women. Again, I would urge your aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, I just wanted to point out that in our committee, no insurance companies came forward to oppose this bill. And again, it only would affect people who are actually covered by insurance. And one of the things that we did hear was that some people's doctors did not know that this was available through their insurance coverage, and so people did have to pay up front and then go through the process of being reimbursed. So again, this is, and I wanted to point out one other fact, and I don't have too many details, but I've heard that Portland has one of the highest rates of uninsured people. So maybe it's because it's a large community. But I wanted to just reintegrate the fact that this is a primary prevention action we can take. This is something we have in our power to do. And I am sure that as we go forth and with our health care coverage discussions, that we'll find that the best use of our money is a little bit upfront to vaccinate, to pre-treat, to prevent, whatever you want to call it, because the backside expenses are so high, especially in cancer treatments. And not only the money, but the personal pain and suffering that people go through when they contract cancer. I just urge your aye vote on this. Thank you very much.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Having House Bill 2794 having received the constitutional majority is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2804 relating to floral retail sales.
The question now arises upon third and final reading of and passage of House Bill 2804A. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring before you today House Bill 2804, which comes to you from House District 22, a bill that will positively impact all parts of our great state. Currently, out-of-state call collectors can advertise as florists in local directories, although they may not in fact be from that local community. As a result, a consumer may believe they are ordering from a local business when in fact their flowers may be coming from across the country. Furthermore, since call collectors retain a portion of the payment before referring the order, the flowers delivered do not represent the full value that a customer ordered. Not only are customers unhappy, it also means money is being directed out of our state. a constituent and small business owner from Woodburn, Cindy Werdinger Kelly, brought this issue to my attention months ago. She owns a small floral shop called Woodburn Floral. She opened the white pages on a Monday morning to find that below her business advertisement was another business with virtually the same name, Woodburn Best Floral. She was slightly bothered but welcomed the competition. That was until angry customers started coming into her local floral store frustrated with the quality of their orders. They told her they had ordered from Woodburn's Best Floral, assuming it was Cindy's shop. After calling the number listed in the white pages, she discovered the business was actually sending the flowers from Wisconsin and had simply printed a Woodburn phone number that was redirected to a long-distance number. Not only does this practice hurt Woodburn consumers, it hurt her business, as many people assumed she was responsible for the bad floral arrangements. As we know, for small business owners, word of mouth is your best source of advertisement. House Bill 2804 provides customers with the true location of floral retailers by requiring the disclosure of the business physical location. This bill will help protect our customers, as our consumers, as well as our local businesses, by giving customers the true option to buy from local florists rather than out-of-state businesses. I bring this bill to you today because I feel it is important to protect our small businesses in these hard economic times. Please support House Bill 2804 with an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. I'm standing to support this bill and really commend the representative from District 22 for bringing this issue forward. You know, this is really important for small business of all sorts, and our committee thought that maybe we could deal with this issue on a broader scale, and perhaps this body will consider dealing with this for other industries as well. The relating to clause was, thanks to legislative counsel, very specific and didn't allow us to expand this bill to other industries who are impacted by unfair practices, what I would consider. So I'm hopeful that we will address this overall issue yet again, but very important for a business like this, selling flowers especially. And urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Comp, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass shall vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Representative Harker votes aye. Representative Kotek, Representative Kotek votes aye. House Bill 2804A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Harker, for what purpose do you rise?
Request permission to return to courtesies, Mr. Speaker, if I may.
Representative Harker request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, colleagues. I apologize for the interruption, but I have some guests here who have just arrived in the gallery. They are Merlo High School students from Beaverton School District up there. If you could stand up and wave, we'll be able to see who you are. They are accompanied by Mr. John Davenport, and I believe Mrs. Kenlin Losk is there as well. Yes. Thank you so much for visiting us today, and hopefully we'll do some constructive entertainment down here for you. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle.
Welcome to the Capitol and your Capitol. Further courtesies? Seeing none, we return to the order of reading House bills. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2817, relating to four hire carriers.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2817A. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 2817. This bill, a little background, I guess. Household good movers have been regulated for many decades to protect consumers from well-documented abuses. House Bill 2817 changes the regulations in the following ways to allow ODOT to do a better job of protecting consumers. First and most importantly, it eliminates existing barriers to getting into the business of moving household goods. Today, a company that is authorized by ODOT as a mover can object to someone else getting into the business. This then requires ODOT to hold a hearing to determine if more household good movers are required. Seldom can a new company meet this test. House Bill 2817 eliminates the ability of existing companies to object and allows ODOT to approve a new entrant if they demonstrate that they have the ability to properly provide the service. The bill also clarifies the definition of household good movers, eliminates the regulation of persons that simply pack and load the goods, requires criminal background checks for those persons that actually enter homes, and increases the maximum penalties for violations from $500 to $1,000. Together, these changes will significantly improve ODOT's ability to regulate the service providers. The committee heard testimony from Oregon Moving and Storage Association, ODOT, existing household good movers, and those that would like to get into the business. All were in support of the bill. Your House Transportation Committee voted unanimously to send House Bill 2817 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I urge your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Beyer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Representative Bruin votes aye. House Bill 2817A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2972, relating to sex offender registration and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2972. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2792 makes two fairly small but very significant changes to petitions for relief from the obligation to register as a sex offender. Now, this only applies to a certain class of sex offenders, so-called where consent is not the issue, only age is the issue. The so-called Romeo and Juliet sex offenses. Under the current statute, if a person can apply to be removed from their obligation to register as a sex offender for these offenses after 10 years, currently the burden of proof is on the state to establish that the person should remain registered. This bill, House Bill 2972, shifts the burden to the petitioner. It also establishes that the petitioner cannot call the victim but for showing good cause to a judge. It is a good bill. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jay Smith, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 2972, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3295, related to juveniles.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3295. Representative Barton.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. I will try to remain brief so that the 60 to nothing streak can continue. House Bill 3295 is a fairly technical change, which is necessary because of Clackamas County's unique program in dealing with juveniles who engage in drunk driving. It is a very good bill. It is necessary for the innovative program that Clackamas County is doing. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger? Representative Berger votes aye. Senate House Bill 3295, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5036, related to financial administration of the State Board of Pharmacy and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5036A. Representative D. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5036 is the budget bill for the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. The Oregon Board of Pharmacy is responsible for the control and regulation of the practice of pharmacy and the regulation of drug outlets involved in the manufacture, production, sale, and distribution of some drugs. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved another funds budget of $5,088,490 and 20 positions with a 19-position equivalent in FTE. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved two packages, one to increase the PRN director and PRN assistant positions from 0.5 FTE to 0.75 FTE each, and for funds to hire temporary help, and a second package to receive pass-through revenue required to process criminal background checks. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means denied a package to increase several license fees. Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5036 as amended.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields votes aye. House Bill 5036A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2138, relating to continuing care retirement communities.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2138A. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2138A updates statutes for continuing care retirement communities, hereafter known as CCRCs, and strengthens consumer protections for individuals who choose to live in CCRCs. Comes to you with the unanimous support of the Human Services Committee. This is a relative simple but little bill that I could be very, very brief on, but I'm just having too much fun carrying this bill today, and partly because it's been a long time in coming. I had the pleasure of hearing an earlier version that came to the same committee in 2007, and that initial effort was brought to us by a very impressive group of CCRC residents who noted that they were blessed with the leadership and wise counsel of Senator Mark Hatfield, who lived in that particular community at the time. In a letter to then-Speaker Minnis in 2005, Senator Hatfield pointed out the importance to residents of management decisions when he wrote, "The actions of management in a community such as this affect not only our finances, but our future care and our entire lives." CCRCs are residential communities that provide residents with a wide array of services, including independent living, assisted living, and nursing facility care. Now, the residents sign a residency agreement or contract for at least a year of care, and they pay an entrance fee. As the proponents noted, under present statute, a person might invest as much as a $300,000 entry fee in a continuing care retirement community and still receive very little in initial disclosure and almost no continuing disclosures as the years go on. So as a result of the 2007 legislation, the Department of Human Services convened an advisory council and reviewed legislation relating to periodic changes, disclosure requirements, and the budget process in CCRCs. The product of that interim effort is House Bill 2138A. It modernizes CCRC statute to enhance consumer protection by strengthening the disclosure requirements. It provides for a resident's bill of rights, it establishes a resident council, and it ensures a resident representative to the community's governing board. House Bill 2138A is the culmination of 4 years of hard work, and I would appreciate your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Shields votes aye. Having received the constitutional House Bill 2138A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2789, relating to parole and probation officers and declared an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2789A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2789A comes to you from your Judiciary Committee, where it passed unanimously. This bill clarifies the definition of probation and parole officers in one portion. ORS 181-610 is modified to include the word or into the language which defines a probation officer. This will allow one county in particular that has been interpreting the law quite narrowly to begin to allow its probation and parole officers to carry their firearms prior to having 1 year of experience on the job. The second part of the bill, which was added as an amendment, adds retired parole and probation officers to the list of people who are exempt from ORS 166-250. And essentially what that allows those retired parole and probation officers to do is to carry firearms and with an exemption in the law. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 2789A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 9, in memoriam, Dr. Robert Bacon, 1918 to 2009.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HCR 9. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Concurrent Resolution 9, which honors Dr. Robert Bob Bacon, passed away quietly surrounded by friends and under the thoughtful care of one of his former students, just before he reached his 91st birthday. Dr. Bacon taught anatomy at OHSU from 1955 to 1982, and he received numerous awards for teaching and research. He won the Student Selected Alan J. Hill Award a remarkable 7 times during the 20-year period. Thousands of students and colleagues credit Dr. Bacon as a positive and lasting influence on their personal and professional lives. And what an honor for one of them to be able to tend to him in his final days. In addition to his work at OHSU, Dr. Bacon was the key force behind the 1967 legislation preserving much of Oregon's coastline, affectionately referred to as the Beach Bill. He was also involved in Oregon's first winemakers, and a known influence on the evolution of Oregon's wine industry. You could always find Bob sitting in the chair at Laurel's Wine Shop in Cannon Beach, either tasting her new Pinot Noir or discussing the attributes of someone else's, most of them Oregon vintners. Dr. Bacon was an upbeat, positive, very popular, sweet, wonderful man, much beloved by people in Cannon Beach, Seaside, Gearhart, and Clatsop County, but well known around our state for his work in conservation, particularly as it pertains to the coast. He will be missed, and we honor him today with this House Concurrent Resolution 9. Please support it.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
No,
she does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass, should be adopted, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Van Orman? Representative Van Orman votes aye. HCR 9, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. First reading of Senate bills.
Sorry about that.
Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5507 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5508 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Clinical Social Workers and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5509 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Clinical Social Workers and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5515 relating to financial administration of the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5516 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Dentistry and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5517 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Dentistry and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5538 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Psychologists and Examiners and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 5546 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Tax Practitioners and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 102 relating to solid fuel burning devices. Senate Bill 180 relating to consolidated state tax returns.
Bills read the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading, Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5539 relating to financial administration of the public employees retirement system and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 356 relating to civil forfeiture of property money and declared an emergency.
Bills read the second time are passed on to third reading. Third reading, Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place Thursday, April 16, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to invite all the House Democrats to join me for lunch in the caucus room immediately. Thanks.
Further announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, you're going to get 15 minutes to get your lunch, and we will caucus immediately at 12:15, please.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My fellow colleagues, I want to be very real with you today. I've not been able to sleep the last couple of weeks. An uncomfortable distress has kept my mind occupied. I truly feel a great sense of anxiety that we, including myself, haven't done enough to fix our economic situation. I see people organizing tea parties, and despite the levity in the media coverage, this is an event of grave citizen concern and contempt at our inability to provide for them the answers they think we have and the solutions they expect from us. I'm not into standing on soapboxes, but I honestly feel this is weighing on my conscience. As a representative, hearing my constituents shout, "No taxation without representation," truly takes the air out of my chest. And I can't stand going home and feeling helpless and ineffective as I watch neighbors, friends, and family members lose jobs. I'm sure we all know senior citizens that have had their 401ks devastated. These are people's lives we are dealing with. And we will be judged not as individuals or parties, but by what we did together as a legislative assembly to make the lives of Oregonians better suited and equipped for this storm. I'm more than a little disturbed, and I fear that we have offered no tangible means for Oregonians to survive, strive, and successfully emerge from this recession. What plans have we implemented that will germinate into sustained and substantial economic growth in the private sector? How many permanent family wage career jobs have we trailblazed on the behalf of or created? I urge this assembly to continue to collaborate for permanent job placement. I urge this assembly to remove the barriers and floodgates and let the roaring river of the Oregon work ethic surge forth. I urge us to remember that each dollar we spend once belonged to someone. And in the spirit of this day, I urge this assembly not to tread too heavily upon our Oregon citizens. In closing, I sincerely extend the olive branch to all members, but at the end of this branch is a shovel head, and I will do whatever is necessary to build confidence in our Oregon workforce. I will keep my door open with perpetual invitation for honest discussion of any idea and solution that might put us back to work. Please do not hesitate to stop by, however briefly it may be, to toss around ideas. We may not always agree to the proper course of the to come up with an economic success, but we can all agree on the destination where we need to be. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today is tax day, as I'm sure we all know here and the people around the state know. And there's an old saying that nothing is certain in life but death and taxes. There's a premise of our Constitution and our society that if you follow the law and you pay your taxes like everyone else, you're a citizen of these United States. But today the reality is that people aren't equal in Oregon. Right now, the federal government does not recognize the landmark legislation that we passed here in Oregon last session on domestic partnerships, and committed same-sex couples currently cannot file jointly under federal law. Now, what does this do? It does a couple of things. One, this means that committed same-sex couples have to pay taxes on the benefits that their partner receives. Imagine paying taxes on the health benefits of your spouse. This can cost thousands of dollars a year, adding up over the years to an enormous amount of money. Second, same-sex couples are often required to file a ghost return. They can't file a joint return under Oregon law until they've calculated their joint taxes under federal law. So they have to complete an entirely separate tax return under federal law. As complicated as that is, paying all the fees that are associated with it, going to their CPA, going through the time to buy the extra software, just for the purpose of filing their Oregon taxes like you or I or anybody else do. Third, federal tax benefits apply to same-sex couples in a different way than to married couples. And this applies to things like the inheritance tax. If the partner of a committed same-sex couple passes away, the partner has to pay as much as 50% on the inheritance of that property. This is an unequal taxation. Again, last session we passed landmark legislation, and now we need the federal government to step up and say that all Oregonians are equal in the eyes of the law, and I urge you to remember that today on tax day. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am deeply hurt today as I would like to give this what I think is very pertinent remonstrance, but so many of my distinguished colleagues have been suffering from hunger pangs or a feeling of urgency to get to their caucus meetings. However, the topic is so, I think, critical and so important that I choose not to wait for another day when there are more people here. In this body, I have heard numerous times, and I have myself stood up during courtesies, to give recognition to athletic teams and other school activities where our students, our state has risen to being nationally recognized or statewide recognized. And I think that today it's time to raise the cheer. Oregon has become number one. Oregon has become number one. We're first in the nation in unemployment. We have accomplished something. I respectfully submit that there are some reasons that we have gotten there. It's not because we live on the West Coast where we have to breathe all the salt air or any of the other things. We have brought much of this on ourselves. Starting back with the spotted owl and moving forward to the present time with a very anti-employment business programs in the state. Colleagues, I think it's time to change direction. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to alert you and your staff to some push polling that's going on regarding the menu labeling bill, House Bill 2726. Participants are being asked leading questions, and then they're being transferred to our legislative offices with a script that they should deliver to us. I spoke to one of those callers today, and the information that they were told was inaccurate. When I talked about the actual provisions of the actual bill, he said he was in favor of the bill. Colleagues, I hope if you know what organization is behind this effort that you will tell them to stop. It's misleading, it's inaccurate, and it's wasting staff time and government money when we already have enough on our plates. Forgive the pun.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m., Thursday, April 16th, 2009.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m., Thursday, April 16th, 2009.
Without objection, the House is adjourned.